and it was following a report that came out around the inequities of Black girls here in Allegheny County.
According to the report, these pathways play a significant role in Pittsburgh and Allegheny County.
And we specifically looked at the rates of Black children being referred to the juvenile justice system. And the main pathways are from school. So literally, we have data that supports the school-to-prison pipeline phenomenon. Specifically, we looked at charges that typically kind of have children being referred to that system. The other way is through fines and citations, summary citations, and usually those come from either the police or the magistrate. We can see some of the same things that happen in other school districts that our children do. They end up in the juvenile justice system or referred to the police, where teachers call the police. After like removing all the different potential scenarios or reasons, for me, the only thing that we can come up with is systemic racism, because we have data that shows that there are white children that commit the same types of behaviors, because I don't want to call them crimes, because oftentimes it's behaviors that are not seen as acceptable. And the most frequently used charge was disorderly conduct. I don't think that all referrals to law enforcement or to the juvenile justice system is done out of maliciousness or, you know, oftentimes it is, you know, people concerned, teachers or administrators feeling that they want to get them help. And the systems themselves, you know, say that we're not geared to give the help that's needed. And oftentimes it's mental health.
Well, what teachers often don't know is going on with young people, and in this case we're talking about Black girls, is that there are so many different challenges happening in a young person's world and reality.
There's like, people have different personalities. Like, yeah, like when you first meet somebody, it might seem mean, but like, maybe it's because they have a story and you don't know it.
Working towards solutions, the Black Girls Equity Alliance held a virtual town hall meeting with leading systems representatives.
It started the something that I've not seen happen here in Allegheny County, of having all the different entities at the table at the same time. So we can't just say it's the education system, because it's not. We can't just say it's the juvenile justice system, because it's not. We can't even just say it's the child welfare system, because it's not. It's pieces of all those systems that have to work together, because and talk to one another and potentially come up with solutions so that, you know, we're really truly addressing the issues and preventing kids from ending up in any of these systems in a negative way.
Everyone, start your engines! Okay?
It's a fun evening at home for Sylvia, Sammy, and Sierra. But at UPMC Children's Hospital, it's a different kind of adventure.
So my name is Sylvia Wusuansa. I am a pediatrician, a pediatric emergency medicine physician, an EMS physician, and currently associate vice chair of diversity, equity, and inclusion at UPMC Children's Hospital, and a mom of two beautiful girls. Sierra is a very creative human being and uses her left brain more. Sammy is very active, rambunctious 4-year-old.
What do you think of when you hear the word adultification?
You know, right off the bat, I think of growing up too early. You know, as a pediatrician, you know, I think of a kid just needing to be a kid. You know, it's easy to see it for yourself. It's harder to see it for your children, and you almost don't want to. because it's so painful. I'll give you another example, again, with the little one, which really shocked me, was we're sitting out in our backyard just talking, and out of nowhere she burst, "I don't want to be a black girl." And several emotions just shot through my brain, my heart, because I never imagined that that would come out of her lips or what would give her reason to that, especially in the household that she's grown up in. And so that enlightened me a lot, to say that me myself, I have a lot of learning to do as to where our girls are and what they're being exposed to and how they're being envisioned. You know, the thing that I always say is people need to understand that our black girls, you know, are first and foremost, they're human. You know, nothing less than human beings. And why not have them reach their potential? Because they are capable of changing this world.
So how do we challenge adultification and its negative outcomes?
I think a lot of that work needs to start with ourselves. So when I was saying before that each of us needs to listen and learn and come back and reflect on what we're doing and ways that we might be unintentionally reinforcing racist practices, that's a start.
What makes young people feel safe are building powerful relationships with adults in the building, knowing that they can show up to a school where they are seen and heard and valued.
So what I want for children's future is for them to understand they are perfectly made in God's image, that they have gifts and talents to succeed and be anything they want to be.
And just imagine if the barriers that are often put in front of them were not there and they were just able to thrive with the support of the adults that are supposed to be protecting them, how much more amazing they could be.
Years of entrenched systems won't change overnight, but it's a future all black girls deserve.
And I would like for people to understand that we are not a threat. Okay, we're normal girls, okay? Like, I would like for people to understand the importance of our hair, our culture, our heritage, like, our skin color. Just understand us. Like, I would like for people to just understand who we are. And I think that would make a difference.
That is something that was recorded back in November of 2020 on a WQED in Pittsburgh, and the title of the piece is called "Childhood Loss: The Adultification of African American Girls Across America and Here in Pittsburgh." A disturbing trend is putting the future of African American girls at risk. It's called adultification. A perception that black girls are more aggressive and less deserving of support and care. A perception that can also lead to negative outcomes and that takes them from the classroom to the courtroom. And they talked to various people in this special and that were challenging the systems and working for change. From WQED Pittsburgh, from November 21st, 2020, was when it was first posted online. So I wanted to share that with you folks. Thank you for listening today.
I just had another dizzy spell and almost fell. I'm scared they will get worse and never go away.
You're not alone. 69 million people suffer from dizziness and vertigo.
I wonder if there's help.
There is. The Vestibular Disorders Association has a helpline at 800-837-8255. 800-828-8428 or visit liferebalanced.org.
Can you repeat that?
800-837-8428 or liferebalanced.org.
Sponsored by the Vestibular Disorders Association.
Medicaid and CHIP offer free or low-cost health coverage for children and teens. Hospital and doctor visits, prescriptions, shots, and more are covered. That's peace of mind for parents if a child is sick or gets injured. And parents may now be eligible for Medicaid too, even if they've applied in the past. Enrollment is always open. Visit InsureKidsNow.gov or call 1-877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Over the past few years, the COVID-19 pandemic has affected how we live our daily lives.
Today, one in five Americans experience emotional and mental health challenges, but many of us do not understand what we are facing or how to ask for help.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, we work every day to eliminate stigma, combat mental illness and substance use disorders, and advance mental health.
If you or someone you love needs help, you are not alone. Please visit mentallyhealthynation.org to...
Michael Norman, your health tip of the day from the African American Wellness Project. Infections like polio, smallpox, and measles used to be as common as coronavirus is today. But now we have life-saving vaccines for those and other diseases. Sadly, too many children still go unvaccinated. Choosing to delay or refuse vaccine puts your child and other children at serious risk. So talk to your child's doctor today about vaccines. And for more information, visit aawellnessproject.org.
WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. My name is Anthony Cacciato, and you're listening to The Angry Young Man. Well, good morning, everybody. Happy Tuesday if you're listening on Tuesday, and happy Thursday in the future if you're listening on Thursday, or I think it's Friday actually now. Weird schedule shifting. Happy good morning. But also happy Constitution Day. Constitution Day is today. What a wonderful way to kind of frame what we're going to be addressing kind of sort of today. Just before we get into the mix of things, as always, everything you hear on the show today is strictly my view and not representative of the station's view on the whole. If I have anyone else soon enough, 9:30 doesn't seem to be very conducive to college students looking to hop on for a nice little conversation. I don't blame them. I haven't even had my coffee yet, but that's a little bit more my fault than anything. But today, is Constitution Day. So what I wanted to do was touch on a couple quick little news tidbits worth noting. And then going on to talk a little bit about, the Constitution. Why do we even want to talk about the Constitution? Is, the Constitution worth talking about? Is the Constitution worth keeping? All this and more on The Angry Young Man today. So, we'll start off just with, for those of you who have been following the show for a while, you'll know I'm, bit of a Milei fanatic, Javier Milei from Argentina, the current president of the country, for running up on about a year in December. What's going on down there? Well, things are turning. The wheels of government are turning, and he's just been doing what politicians tend not to do, and following through on promises and making the hard choices very often. So a quick recap for those of you who are unaware with the situation in Argentina. Argentina has long been in a state of stagnation ever since Juan Perón took power in the 1950s and instituted his kind of third way economic, whatever you want to call it, that involved mass nationalization of different firms in the country, specifically British investment. Basically, it was kind of like a, we're not socialists, but we're not, we're not going to turn away from some of those wonderful goodies that they've been using out there. So what happens? Argentina goes from being like a top-rate world economy, like preeminent power in like the secondary or tertiary league of powers. Like they were on par with Australia, which isn't, like, wow, they're on par with Australia. But I mean, it was pretty good. They were doing great and they were set to grow, but Perón kind of killed that. And they've stagnated since. I've dealt with massive inflation recently as well due to fiscally irresponsible management of government. Between massive spending, price controls, and nationalization of key industries, as well as massive import barriers, the country kind of turned itself upside down, inside out, and kind of screwed everyone over. I mean, I'll be frank. I had my grandmother was born in Argentina, left Argentina in the 1950s with my great-grandparents because of the regime change in Argentina when Perón became president and started instituting these reforms. It spelled trouble for everybody. Everyone was trying to get out if they had the ability to do so. But anyways, what happens in the kind of midst of this crisis arrives this guy, Javier Milei. Now, who is he? This guy was an economist who'd go on talk shows and kind of talk about, you know, why is government and what it's doing right now completely and utterly irresponsible and ineffective and ultimately being the reason that you're going through so much hardship. I mean, he had a very energetic style that kind of caught about him. But what he was doing that a lot of people weren't doing is talking about the economic ideas of Austrian school economists. Now, the Austrian school, started by a guy named, I'm blanking right now, it's early in the morning, blanking on the founder right now, but Karl Menger, there we go, and then kind of developed and made popular by Ludwig von Mises, who was an Austrian economist, who then mentored many other economists, namely Friedrich Hayek in that mix as well. But why are they important? They offer this perception of economics that kind of centers itself on certain principles, which can be best described as free market in nature. And while, you know, in many cases their ideas have kind of been taken on by either the mainstream or Chicago economists. I mean, Milton Friedman took a lot of cues from Austrian economics, but Milei, as an economist, was, you know, kind of the way that he went about describing himself was as an Austrian, and in terms of his influences. All this to say, though, he brought this radical idea of cutting down the government, you know, reducing the state, reducing expenditure, and putting the kind of passing the buck back to the people of Argentina. And in the midst of triple-digit inflation, and in an election where he was running against the economic minister of that administration, which had caused the inflation, Milei managed to pull out first and became the first libertarian president in world history. Now, what has he been doing? Dramatically cutting down government bureaucracy, tapering back spending, massive austerity, which, you know, one of the things he acknowledged at the outset was the difficulty of, you know, trying to do this without any pain. There was going to be pain eventually in repealing years and years of failed policy in Argentina. And, you know, while there's been some pain, there's been tremendous gain. Inflation almost slowed down to a halt, as well as massive surplus compared to what had been seen in the past. Now, all this to say, tying back to the present, he recently got up in front of their Congress and basically made a declaration of, you know, we're going to cut the deficit with this spending bill, or I'm not going to pass it. I'm going to veto it. Taking a very strong stand on that matter. I mean, I can maybe even get a quote here in terms of what he said on the budget, but he's not compromising here. I mean, so he basically went up and said, well, you know, I promised a fiscal surplus. If you attempt to threaten this zero deficit plan, I'm going to knock it down. Which, listen, I think that that takes a lot of sheer confidence and, you know, bravery to be able to stand up there and make those sorts of tough decisions in the interest of fixing your country. Now, How does this all tie back to the kind of grander theme of today? So I actually wrote something not too long ago, put it out on out of my local paper back in New York. But Milei and what he stands for and what he's trying to achieve stands at the very heart of the ideas that founded our nation. Now, what do I mean by that? The United States exists, you know, very, very differently than other countries as a country built on ideas. A country built on the idea that you should have determination over your life, what you do, how you spend your money. You know, these are very core tenets of what America is supposed to be. It's enshrined and woven through our Constitution. Our Constitution is inherently a document which aims to uphold the idea that there ought to be government which is limited, government which works for the people, and government which cannot overly intrude itself on the lives of its citizens. You know, we had a Bill of Rights as well, which, you know, there's the argument to be made that it was redundant because, of course, people wouldn't look at the Constitution and, you know, assume that those, you know, those rights are not a given. They said, you know, how could we expect that, you know, if the Constitution already goes about ensuring that government can't trample on these rights intrinsically, why should we have to spell it out? As we've seen in the last 200 or so years, we really needed to spell it out. It's kind of scary how much we needed to spell it out for numerous reasons. You know, for one, the amount of times that, I mean, you could look back to American legal history and jurisprudence that surrounded Bill of Rights related cases. I mean, it's the amount of times we'd have to lean back on those provisions of the Constitution to ensure that government is not having a field day trampling your rights is tremendous. I mean, to this day, I mean, we have consistent attacks from government on Bill of Rights, you know, enumerated rights, you know. Well, to you know, kind of even go back for a second, I mean, we, you know, a lot of these people that founded our government said, why should we even have to spell it out? People should be already able to know that looking at this document, the government's granted very specific things that it can do. And among those things that it can't do is restrict your right to free speech, your right to bear arms, your right to, you know, any number of things listed in the Bill of Rights. But there was a push to kind of enumerate them because with very valid concern, the government could very quickly trample those rights. You know, government, even with the Bill of Rights in place, has gone and kind of made a mockery of our Constitution in many ways. It's a very good book I read not too long ago called Who Killed the Constitution? It's a Tom Woods book, and it kind of goes through this long, not really long, but through many case studies in which the federal government has outright just ignored the Constitution. The purpose of why we have the Constitution is to very explicitly limit the scope of government. But what we've seen over the past 200 or so years is that government will find every little nook and cranny in which it can expand its power and do so, you know. You know, the executive will take opportunities to ban speech which is detrimental to the war effort with the Sedition Acts, or it will intern Japanese Americans or Italian Americans or German Americans because they're seen as a national security threat. It will intervene in labor negotiations and, you know, any number of things that constitutionally are completely, totally unthinkable. But just do it anyways, because who's going to stop them? You know, it all kind of ties back to, you know, why the ideas that we have that are central to who we are. In large part, you know, while we have a constitution that is embedded with those ideas of liberty, limited government, self-determination, we very often fail to follow through on those ideas and fail to ensure that the next generation of Americans value those things. You know, we're, like I said earlier, a country that is founded on ideas. We're not, you know, Italy, for example, is founded on the fact that they're Italians. Italians, in their kind of shared history and ethnicity and what have you, are a nation because of that. And that's their identity. Italy exists because there are Italian people. Now, America could exist because there's American people. But then you'd be talking about the hundreds of native nations to the land in which we inhabit. And that's kind of the what you would call the American nations. But if they were based on simply the American people, you know, American people come from a vast range of backgrounds and different nations. But we're not, you know, a nation necessarily of those qualities. We're a nation of the ideas that we as a people jointly uphold. You know, there's some of them which we have fairly broad consensus on, but there's some we don't. And it's okay to disagree, but, you know, you can find sometimes when you disagree with someone who is a very different mind, if you can't find a point at which you overlap, it's very hard to kind of come to some sort of compromise. And that's the problem that's happening in terms of our national identity. We, in many ways, can't agree on some of the basics that were agreed on at the outset. You know, we have people that want to expand the scope of government and ensure freedoms from as opposed to freedoms to. What I mean by that is, you know, the idea that, you know, in the absence of government intervention, you have certain freedoms. But there are those who claim that if government acts in your interest, you gain freedom by, you know, having freedom from hunger, freedom from, you know, what have you. But those freedoms from require pulling back on freedoms too. Freedom to spend your money as you please is not very conducive to freedom from homelessness. If that requires government to have a program for housing, because who's going to pay for it? You are. So all things to consider there in terms of you know, what's going on. I think, you know, and I said this in the aforementioned little article, I think it's important that we look back at the ideas on which we were founded and, you know, kind of look to Argentina and what's going on right now as a reminder of what we claim to hold near and dear to ourselves as a nation, but also as a, you know, at least consolation that even if we fall very far astray of that, there's a way back. There's always a way back. But that way back requires that people are ready and willing to kind of get on the same page, which in some cases has not been the case. But before we get back into that, just wanted to let you know very quickly that Tartan Ink joins you in supporting WRCT. Tartan Ink is a full-service copy print shop conveniently located in the University Cohen Center on Carnegie Mellon University campus. Services provided by the Copy Center include black and white and color copies, single and double-sided copying, assortment of colored and textured papers, including cover stock, specialty papers such as gloss paper, resume quality paper, as well as large format poster paper. They also offer binding and finishing options that include cutting, lamination, folding, padding, stapling, tape binding, thermal binding, collating, comb binding, and coil binding, as well as being an authorized ship and drop site for UPS shipping. For more information, visit their website at cmu.edu. /TardenInc or call 412-268-4828. And if you're interested in underwriting for WRCT, you can email pr@wrct.org for more information. Also, did you know that a single ember that escapes from a wildfire can travel over a mile, carrying a world of trouble? It can land, ignite, and destroy your home and community. You can't control where that ember will land, but you can control what happens before it does. With simple steps to adapt to wildfire, like cleaning areas around buildings, knowing community safe zones, and making sure your local fire departments are prepared, you and your neighbors help protect your homes and community from more wildfire damage. Becoming fire adapted is more than one person can take on alone. It takes a community to protect a home. Visit fireadapted.org today to find more tips and tools to help you protect your home and community from wildfires. Get fire adapted. Public service message brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and WRCT. Also, just a couple shows we have here on WRCT. Firstly, From Here to Eternity. Everyone thinks they know the 80s hits, but on the other side of the Atlantic lies a treasure trove of synth-drenched sounds that filled the airwaves of Europe back in the day. Take a trip back to the 80s you never knew with DJ Tony Toons. From Here to Eternity, Mondays at 4 p.m. Also, tune into Kaleidoscope, an eclectic hour of music with your very own DJ Kate, Mondays at 10, only on WRCT Pittsburgh. Add to the colorful mix by calling in requests. Alrighty. Well. So, I say all this to kind of set the tone going into the election as well. You know, we often find that a lot of the discourse that we have today isn't very constitutionally grounded. We're not really kind of taking heed to where the Constitution comes into play. And that's a double-sided issue. I think that both sides of the coin are guilty of that. I think in many cases, the expansion of the power of the presidency that both would seek to undertake would not be conducive to the sort of national identity we've laid out for ourselves. I'd like to think that if any of the people responsible for putting the Constitution together, which is kind of just James Madison, which props to James Madison for putting together the Constitution pretty much by himself. That man practically locked himself in a room for about a year or two, studied pretty much every form of government, came back to the Constitutional Convention and was like, here's the government, have fun. So, if you ever have any qualms with the government, direct it towards James Madison, because very likely he wrote the part that you didn't like. But this all to say, it's concerning how little regard for the Constitution there is in kind of broader discourse surrounding. At least in the presidential context, you know, it's not really touched on much outside of kind of like a passing reference to the values of our nation. And then briefly, you know, afterwards swept aside and, you know, moving on to talking points. You know, you hear a big talking point at the Democratic National Convention was this idea of like, you know, they use the word freedom a lot, but I don't know if any of you have ever watched The Princess Bride, but it's there's the one scene where he's like, that word, use it a lot, but I don't think you know what it means. I don't think they know what it means when they use it in the context they do. There's, you know, a lot of lip service to freedom, but not so much action on freedom when you're, you know, willing to engage in other unconstitutional things like, you know, shutting down the country and penalizing people for exercising freedom of movement. Who would have thought? It's also somewhat concerning how short the national memory can be. But you know, words of encouragement as we, you know, head into these next, you know, couple of weeks, a little under 2 months left before the election. Read the Constitution if you can. It's not too long. There's a couple amendments at the end, but it's not too long. It'll give you a good idea of, you know, what do we value? Why are we here? How do we work? And what should we strive to be? We often kind of lose that because I don't think people take enough time to go back and look at the Constitution. You know, the Constitution, outside of being our governing document, is, again, kind of the, you know, the why. Why are we doing this? Why do we have a country? And that's an important thing to remember, because if you forget who we are, if you lose that in the mix of, you know, your partisan agenda to achieve whatever have you, if your cult of personality or you're looking to dramatically increase the size of the federal government or, you know, what have you. You need to be grounded in why we're here and how do we work. And it's worth everyone taking a little bit of time to, at least, you know, on this Constitution Day, take some time, read a Constitution. I'm going to be practicing what I preach. I'm going to be giving a little gander myself as well as handing out constitutions because, you know, you should read it. It's as Americans, you should know why this country you live in is here. What is it here for? What does it mean? Why did so many people risk their lives to protect this idea or to leave their countries and come to this beacon of idealism? You know, what makes America, what's that special sauce that makes America different from everyone else? And that's the Constitution. So take that time if you can. Give it a little read. Find areas you might disagree. Think, why do I disagree? You know, do I really believe in the mission we have as a nation? You got to believe in the mission we have as a nation. You know, it's to have a nation which is divided in its goal for itself is a nation without vision. And the founders laid out a national vision for us. You know, Benjamin Franklin was asked, you know, towards the end of putting together the Constitution, you know, what form of government are we going to have? And he said, a republic, if you can keep it. At the same time, Tocqueville observed American democracy and wrote about it and spoke to his concern about the eventual kind of delegation of liberties and freedoms to the state until we've given it all away for safety. And that's the tendency that people have right now, to not value the liberty we have and to rather trade it for safety, to give away the republic that we've been entrusted to keep. So take that time. See where you stand. Take a little temperature check. Read the Constitution. Because now more than ever, it's important that we have a firm grasp on why we're here, what we're doing, and who's going to lead that charge to help us keep the republic. It's worth thinking about. But anyways, I won't hold you much longer. You got things to go do. Got a beautiful rest of your day ahead of you. And with that, I wish you a wonderful, spectacular rest of your day. Hope to see you all next week. Ciao.
Mike Lenore with your health tip of the day from the African American Wellness Project.
Infections like polio, smallpox, and measles used to be as common as coronavirus is today. But now we have life-saving vaccines for those and other diseases. Sadly, too many children still go unvaccinated. Choosing to delay or refuse vaccine puts your child and other children at serious risk. So talk to your child's doctor today about vaccines. And for more information, visit aawellnessproject.org.
This is a production of PBRTV.com. Recorded at the PBRTV.com studios in the North Hills of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Eric O'Brien welcomes you to ease the stress of your day with smooth, relaxing, and easy on Tube City Online Radio, Vulcan Sound Radio, and 88.3 FM, WRCT Pittsburgh, and WRCT.org.
1974, Neil Sedaka and Laughter in the Rain, or Sedaka, depending on how you pronounce it, there with Laughter in the Rain. Yes, and before that, we had John Fox, When Will I See You Again? I'm Eric O'Brien. Welcome to Smooth, Relaxing, and Easy for another week. Good to see you again here. And although this is radio, we really can't see each other, can we? So that's a silly thing to say, of course. But it's nice to see you. Well, let's talk about the holidays that you need to celebrate that you didn't know you needed to celebrate because they're there to celebrate, but you didn't know about them. February 7th is Bubblegum Day. That's the first Friday in February. Not sure the significance of that. I mean, go out and chew bubblegum, I guess. National Fettuccine Alfredo Day. If you like that heavy cheese sauce on your heavy noodles, that's perfectly fine. Send a card to a friend day. Well, that was probably created by a card company, as is a holiday coming up in about another week. And, February 7th is also Wave All Your Fingers at Your Neighbor Day. It's the perfect opportunity to greet your neighbor with a big wave, but to show your respect and appreciation for this very important day, you must wave with all of your fingers. So I don't know if that means you wiggle them in addition to waving or what, but it's supposed to put a smile on your face unless your neighbors are just mean and just not happy. So there you go. February 8th is Boy Scout Day, the birthday of scouting. It's also Kite Flying Day. Now, why would we do this in the middle of winter? I don't know. February 9th is National Pizza Day. This year it is also Super Bowl Sunday. It's Super Bowl 59, if you can believe that. And it's also Toothache Day. There's no rhyme or reason why that is Toothache Day. But anyhow, February 10th is Clean Out Your Computer Day, the second Monday of every February. National Flannel Day, if you're into that. Umbrella Day. I guess it rains that day. I don't know. Anyhow, February 11th is Don't Cry Over Spilled Milk Day. You shouldn't. It's a waste of time. It's also Make a Friend Day, which is not a waste of time. And it's National Inventors Day and White T-shirt Day. February 12th, of course, is Abraham Lincoln's birthday and International Darwin Day and National Lost Penny Day. It's also Plum Pudding Day. Plum Pudding Day, which I would have thought would have been in December, but what do I know? And finally, February 13th is Get a Different Name Day. That's for your formal name. Decide if you like it, then change it if you wish. Your parents might not approve, but they will love you and accept it. Right. Sure. Do the same with your nickname. Change it if you desire. And give a friend a new nickname and they'll punch you in the face. It says we recommend a complimentary one. But anyhow, February 13th is also National Wingman Day, which is just a silly holiday as a prelude to Valentine's Day. So there you go. Those are the holidays of the day that you didn't know you needed to celebrate, and you probably won't. Here are the 101 Strings with Close to You on Smooth, Relaxing, and Easy.
your day rough, irritating, and difficult? Spend a couple of hours with smooth, relaxing, and easy. And suddenly, your day will be brighter.
Michael and Norman, your health tip of the day from the African American Wellness Project. Infections like polio, smallpox, and measles used to be as common as coronaviruses today. But now we have life-saving vaccines for those and other diseases. Sadly, too many children still go unvaccinated. Choosing to delay or refuse vaccine puts your child and other children at serious risk. So talk to your child's doctor today about vaccines. And for more information, visit aawellnessproject.org.